Daniel, it seems that more and more people are interested in shamanism, or they want to visit shamans. Why?
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 Well, I mean, it's about the most amazing experience that you can have, really, to go through an iboga or an ayahuasca or a peyote ceremony, you know, with somebody who's really been trained and has mastery over that tradition.
How long have they done? I guess it's been taught, right? It's family to family.
Sure, we don't know how far back these traditions go. You know, some of them may go back thousands of years.
And what are the things the shaman tries to teach someone? What do they try to do?
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, shaman is a word, you know, that's from the Siberian culture that we now use for a whole, you know, bunch of different practitioners. You know, I mean, Eliade wrote the famous book about shamanism. But shamans are, they usually are healers, but they can also be kind of sorcerers. They will go into visionary trance. They'll suck poisons or spirits, you know, possess spirits out of people. They'll sing. You know, one of the most beautiful experiences I've had with ayahuasca is working with the Sequoia tribe in Ecuador, where all the shamans, everybody lies on these hammocks in this temple, a very rudimentary temple, but it suddenly becomes this. It's almost like a spaceship, because as you drink the ayahuasca and they're singing these Icaros, you feel like they're guiding you through these different planes or different dimensions of reality. And they'll actually stop in the middle of the ceremony to check in with each other to see if they're all in the same place. So they'll suddenly say, like, oh, are you seeing the blue people right now? And the other shaman will say, oh, yes, I'm seeing the blue people. So then they'll know they've kind of aligned their, you know, their frequencies. Then they go on.
That is amazing. Let's take some calls here. Bob's in Portland, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Bob. You're on with Daniel Pinchback.
Hi, Daniel. I enjoyed your book.
Oh, thank you.
The shift in consciousness, the next evolution in consciousness, that I think will be the when we transcend our biological nature in order to become beings of energy, which is our true nature. We are energy beings. And that will involve first step being to reach that energy side of our nature. In the ancient world, that was called gnosis and satori. And when that happens, it certainly will transform people from being living in a mundane kind of world that we have now to wanting to be in a different frame of consciousness. Would you agree with that?
I don't know if I agree. I tend to think that the physical body is something that we stick with still for a while. And that actually, you know, it's a great, you know, spacesuit that we're zipped into for kind of checking out, you know, this planet and maybe other planets. So, yeah, I don't think that I mean, personally, what do I know? But, you know, I think it's more likely that, I mean, we haven't really, you know, kind of completed, you know, our task of kind of working with the Earth. Rudolf Steiner talks about that humans, you know, kind of, humans' kind of mission, in a sense, is to transform the Earth. And, I mean, I don't know. I feel that the physical body is a very suitable container for that. I mean, it may be that we learn to run the body on subtler levels of energy, more on prana, more on sunlight, and need less solid, you know, food. I mean, one of the ideas that I toy with a lot is that as part of the shift, somehow the physical and material world is becoming like subtly less dense and more psychically available or psychically malleable. So there is a kind of transition taking place, but it's in some ways quite a subtle one.
Did the shamans ever talk, Daniel, about visiting other planets through their journeys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, and I've had kind of almost these comical visionary experiences where suddenly I'm like, you know, in this rocket ship and these spirits are like, go, go, go. And then you're kind of like flying around to see these different worlds and different kind of beings who are, you know, contentedly living on these other worlds. You know, I mean, it would be interesting. I mean, you know, if you look at a culture like the classical Mayan culture, if you go to Palenque and really think about, you know, the architecture there, or maybe take some mushrooms and experience it in that way, you really have a sense that there were these cultures that had developed the pursuit of non-ordinary states of consciousness in ritual circumstances to a very, very refined degree, and they really may have been experiencing things on these visionary levels that we really don't even have access to yet until we've really learned this whole technology of how to use sound and image and light and ritual and so on to enter these non-ordinary state realms.
Do you think these visions are real? I mean, they're actually seeing something physical in their minds, or is it something that the mind has just created, like a dream?
Well, I mean that gets into very deep philosophical questions,
mm-hmm.
Because I believe that in a way our physical material reality is kind of dreamlike ultimately also,
sure.
And that ultimately there's kind of as the Vedanta philosophy talks about, there's kind of one consciousness that kind of breaks itself apart into infinite fractal bits, so that it can then experience itself and play with its own potential. So in that sense, I feel that what's actually real is the imagination and the imaginal realms, or just as real as anything we experience physically. And it's perfectly sensible from my perhaps weird perspective that you could bring in beings from the imaginal realm and have a collective experiences of them, and even if enough focus was put, they could become purely entirely visible and physical also.